The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with SuperValue Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance online at supervalue.ie.
Now, the John Murray Show has joined forces with TV programme The Works to find Ireland's best loved poem of the 100 years between 1914 and 2014. We called for nominations from the public and you responded in your thousands. I'm glad to say that all those nominations have been whittled down to 10 final poems. We're going to announce 5 of those this morning and you'll have to wait until The Works tonight to find out about the other 5. I'm going to welcome 3 members of the jury now that put the list of 10 together. Anne Doyle, formerly of this parish, and it's great to have you here.
Hi, John.
Singer-songwriter Damien Dempsey. Good to have you too.
Hello,
Damien.
Hello, John. Thanks.
And we're also joined in our Cork studio by John Fitzgerald, who is the UCC's librarian. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning, John.
And perhaps, John, you might start by reminding people, the listener, of the process so far.
Sure. Well, the Poem for Ireland project is about, really, it's about sparking a national celebration of Irish poetry. And it's doing this by identifying at this stage 10 much-loved Irish poems as a kind of a springboard. And what we want to do with the campaign is not to kind of hold a competition set off a horse race, as it were, of poems or of poets, but it's to tell the story of modern Irish poetry over a century, from 1914 to the present day, through the poems initially that we choose, which will then ultimately allow the public to choose one as the best-loved poem. So we received nominations, as you said, thousands of nominations for hundreds of poems and for, you know, representing hundreds of poets. And what we've been doing over the last few months is whittling those down to this final shortlist of 10. And what we've tried to do with the 10 that we've chosen is, as I say, not to just religiously choose the 10 most nominated, but to choose 10 which paint as complete a possible, as complete a portrait as possible of modern Irish poetry.
Mm-hmm. And the jury duty, did you enjoy it, John?
I really enjoyed it. It felt like a kind of a self-help group when we all encountered each other, under the stewardship of Sarah Ryder and our chair John Kelly and our genius Niall McMonagall. But it felt a little bit better when we all realised that there was actually nothing wrong with this strange affliction of loving poetry. Mm-hmm. And what was really interesting about it was that when we got together, Niall had assembled hundreds of books of poetry for us, you know, just to use as reference, and to see the sheer, literally, volume of work produced by Irish poets over the last century and the quality of the poems emerging in the nominations, it really, came across to me what a privilege it is, not just to act as a juror, but to actually be alive after a century of such rich poetic productivity.
And how did you enjoy the whole jury thing?
I had an absolutely fabulous time, still am, John. I haven't the slightest doubt that, as is often the case, my contribution might have been on the common touch lines. There was quite a high academic level amongst the jurors. I found it fascinating. I found it a wonderful learning curve. I was quite surprised to see how biased I was at the start. That unfolded as time went on. And I'm hoping that my personal experience of learning, of having my mind opened, is what this is actually going to mean to other people. It has already meant that from, you know, the number of people who have participated in nominations. And now that we're down to that short list of 10, I think that that will make people's interest even keener. And it means, they may find that, like me, they don't spend all their lives lurking at the Scandi-Noir crime thrillers. They start hanging out at the poetry section as well. I hope so. That's what it's done for me.
That's your ambition. And as you say, it's done for you. Damien, were you surprised at the range of poems nominated by the public?
It was a massive range. You just realise how, the richness of poetry in this small island, really, you know. It's one of the, I think we're one of the best in the world at poetry, I think, you know.
And you had a bit of crack along the way, I take it.
Oh, it was great, yes.
It wasn't all serious business, I take it.
Yeah, as Anne said, Anne was the common touch and I was a sort of layman, you know, brought in. But yeah, me and Anne disagreed over a couple of poems and we had to go toe-to-toe, but Anne fights dirty, so I came off the worst.
Tell us more, Anne.
Look, after 30 years in the newsroom, you'd have to be a street fighter, John, you know that. Not that you did 30 years, a youngster
I mean. I know what you mean, yeah. And now, there was wild cards in place, John. Just explain why they were in place and why they were then not used.
Yeah, there were 10 wild card poems, and they were poems which were chosen independently of the jury. They were chosen poems from 10 living authors, 10 living poets, who were generally underrepresented in the public nominations. And, you know, they were given to us if we felt that we needed to draw on them to complete that portrait that I spoke about earlier, that sense of a picture of Irish poetry across the century. And they were also there to, I suppose, remind us that it isn't historical, this isn't and shouldn't be a historical exercise, and that, you know, we needed to represent living and breathing Irish poets in our nominations. As it turned out, you know, we didn't make a whole lot of use of those wild cards, but it was really, really interesting and useful to have them there.
Okay, now the suspense is killing. Let's work through the 5 poems now, one by one. And we asked people on the streets of Galway to read extracts from each poem, so thanks to them. And the first of the 5 is W.B. Yeats with Easter 1916. Let's have an extract from it now.
I have met them at close of day, coming with vivid faces from counter or desk among grey 18th century houses. I have passed with a nod of the head, or polite meaningless words, or have lingered a while and said polite meaningless words, and thought before I had done of a mocking tale or a jibe to please a companion around the fire at the club, being certain that they and I but lived where motley is worn. All change, changed utterly, a terrible beauty is born.
No big surprise there, Anne, really, is there, at the inclusion of Easter 1916?
No, I don't really think, John, that you could have got past it. I mean, I know iconic is a very hackneyed word, but really, how could you? And it's, you know, obviously particularly appropriate for the times we're living in and the anniversary coming up and so on. But for me, apart from it being a magisterial poem, a poem that shows somebody revealing their mistakes, changing their mind, who could express more magnificently the sort of confrontation that we really all should have in our lives, where quite often it's not that easy, especially as you get older, it's not that easy to actually realise that you're quite wrong, even if that's about quite small things. And the language is wonderful. It's a magnificent poem. I have to say, I thought that would be a no-brainer.
And it was, as it turned out. Damien, you're nodding in agreement with Anne.
Yeah, it conjures up like the awe that people felt. You know, I think a lot of people felt that these the heads who were going to, you know, take on the British then were a bit of a joke and they weren't going to go through with it, you know. They didn't realise their conviction. And he talks about the stone in the river, you know, and the river's flowing around the stone and there's life going on around it, but the stone stays there. That's their conviction, that they were going to go through with this. And when they did go through with it, Ireland was just in awe, you know. And just a terrible beauty was born. I think that he's kind of saying that this blood sacrifice is going to lead to more blood sacrifice, a lot more. And that was the terrible beauty, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's talking about a fella he hates, McBride, a vainglorious lout, you know. But he says, you know, he's mythical now, you know, he's a hero now. Mm-hmm. Even though I hated the man, you know. Mm-hmm. He has to admire the courage of his convictions, I suppose.
Sure, sure. John, what about you? Is John there? Hello, John. We've lost John in Cork. Anyway, we're going to go to our second poem nomination now. And not surprisingly, again, it's Patrick Kavanagh and A Christmas Childhood. We'll hear a bit of it now.
One side of the potato pits was white with frost. How wonderful that was, how wonderful. And when we put our ears to the paling post, the music that came out was magical. The light between the ricks of hay and straw was a hole in heaven's gable. An apple tree with its December glinting fruit we saw. Oh, you Eve were the world that tempted me to eat the knowledge that grew in clay, and death the germ within it. Now and then I can remember something of the gay garden that was childhood's again.
Yes, that's A Christmas Childhood by Patrick Kavanagh. John, are you there now?
I'm there now.
All right, okay, I've got worried about you for a minute. What about this poem?
I mean, this is another masterpiece. It's a masterpiece of revived memory. Seamus Heaney said about Kavanagh that what Kavanagh did for him was it gave him the courage of his own experience. And what Kavanagh does so wonderfully in this poem and generally is he makes the ordinary extraordinary. He talks about the ordinary, but he makes it extraordinary. And what he does here is he makes the Christmas childhood such an extraordinary thing. I mean, the first two lines are literally the glimpse of the little six-year-old boy looking out the window, looking at the potato pits and exclaiming how wonderful that was, how wonderful. It's a celebration also of the kind of universal aspects of experience. So everybody has had this experience, and so he's celebrating it for all of us. Mm-hmm. Absolutely extraordinary poem.
What about you, Damien? What about this poem?
Yeah, he just puts me in the mind of a six-year-old, you know, and just the awe and the wonder and the beauty of innocence, you know. And I'm a city boy, but it makes me want to go to be in the country more, you know. And just, you know, a lot of the things at another time of year will be associated with drudgery, you know, like really hard work, you know. But at Christmas time, they just become magical for him, and it's great to put you in the child's imagination. And he kind of says that we can get back there sometimes at Christmas, you know, even as adults, you know.
Wonderful images conjured up, as you say.
I'm very musical.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, John Spillane put it to music here on the show a couple of years ago for our Murray Christmas CD. So that was a particularly good exercise on his part.
Another great poet.
Another great poet is right, yeah, John. I'm going to move on now to the third poem, which is Trí Ghaeilge. It's Sean O'Riordan and Fila Rís.
Fog glown in yalt hir, is the will the isha or dearna idil. Dún the eintin ir harla. O bolach ka hun toile. Is on uur gewillen tulach traum. Is on boher fada. Winded viaur. Srahar hi viel tochtun virle. Shelley, Keats is Shakespeare. Filarishter de chid. Nig de intin. Is nig de hanga. A chuig kangelte. A go rerev. Vi bonoscun le derim.
And that's an extract from Sean O'Riordan's Fila Rís. Anne, on this particular poem, what was it about it?
This poem I was familiar with, and I have to say at the outset, John, that my Irish is poor, but on a positive note, partly, in fact, really primarily as a result of this experience, I've actually signed up. I have my first Irish class next Monday.
Oh, brilliant.
Sorry to say that I missed the first one. This is the second one. And my pal Michael, who was at it, brought home the notes. And again, I got a shock when you realise how much you have forgotten.
Sure.
But hopefully it will come back. But I asked one of our jurors, Riona, read it beautifully, and then I asked a friend who has beautiful Irish to read it aloud, and I was familiar with the poem, but really you need to hear it read.
Sure.
Like that, to hear the music in it. This poem just moved me enormously. As I say now, for me to sign up for an Irish class, hey, what more can I say?
Yeah, how many classes are there, by the way?
There are 10 and I've missed one, but I'm sure I'll catch up on the notes.
Come back to us then and talk to us, Trí Ghaeilge, in the near future.
Well, please God, I'm hoping. It's been, I mean, really, it's a horrifying thought that, you know, John, that if you don't keep up your Irish and you leave school at 17, let's not bother doing the sums, but it's a while back, as they say. But I'm hopeful that it's there somewhere.
Good stuff. And John, in Cork, Fila Rís by Sean O'Riordan, why its inclusion, do you think?
Well, not just because he's another contrarian Cork man, but one of the things that's interesting about this poem and remarkable about it is the way it fuses language with place. And so what he's saying is to leave the valley of the mad back east and also leave the English language and go back to Cork Aguina, go back to the Blaskets, leave Shelley, Keats and Shakespeare behind. What he's doing is fusing national identity and identity through language and through place. He was one of the major major poets of the century who is still very, very popular, Irish language poets, who's still very popular. And this also was one of the most popular Irish language poems in terms of the nominations.
And it's worth mentioning at this point that you will be able to hear the 10 poems in full read by current and former winners of the Poetry Aloud competition. And you can also get more information there about the poets and the poems. Incidentally, Anne, do you expect criticism when it comes to the choices you made?
Well, let me say that when it came to the selection process, it was hard fought. Yes. I mean, we had it was really interesting experience, John, in that by about 11:30, we'd started, I think, around 8:30. Mm-hmm. And by 11:30, it looked like we actually had more or less a shortlist.
Yeah.
But as is the nature of things, it had only just begun.
Yeah,
and it might have been as well that we weren't down there for a week because there might have been blood on the floor. But I think people maybe not overly surprised at the list of poets represented, but they certainly may be surprised at the choice of some of the poems.
Yeah.
And obviously people will, the wonder and usefulness of this is that people quite clearly have their own very strong views. So yeah, not everybody's going to agree with everything, but sure, that's half the fun. I mean, the whole point about this is that it will stimulate interest, discussion, and hey, what's wrong with a bit of controversy?
Exactly, yes indeed. And our fourth poetry choice this morning in the search for Ireland's best loved poem is Quarantine by Evan Boland.
In the worst hour of the worst season, of the worst year of a whole people, a man set out from the workhouse with his wife. He was walking, they were both walking, north. She was sick with famine, fever, and could not keep up. He lifted her and put her on his back. He walked like west and north until nightfall under freezing stars they arrived.
What about Evan Boland, Damien? What did you make of that particular poem? Was it one you lobbied for particularly?
It was, yeah. I think because a lot of Irish people find it hard to imagine what's called a famine. You know, that you can't really call it that because a lot of food was being shipped out at the time. You know, but anyway, a lot of people find it hard to put themselves in the place of people there, and they think it's like another planet that it happened on. But it's only my grandmother's grandmother was born at the time of the famine, so it's my granny's granny, you know. So this poem really puts you in the place. It puts me there with my lover, you know, and just watching our dreams kind of, you know, die, and all our hopes and dreams for the future go, you know, and it kind of humanises that event in Irish history for me, so I think it was important to put that in there.
Mm-hmm. And John, what about you?
Yeah, absolutely. This is one I was rooting for. It's a chilling, courageous poem describing the death of two people, and it's a kind of a love poem, you know, which is so powerful that it's unsettling. It's actually based on a Taher Padraig O'Leary anecdote of a couple who are walking and who are probably walking from the workhouse where during the famine husband and wife would have been separated and children would have been separated from both husband and wife. You know, this couple were probably walking from the workhouse back home literally to die. And it illustrates how powerful poetry is, as well as what an extraordinary time that was in our history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anne?
Yeah, this is a particular favourite of mine. It's very much, I think, a love poem. The famine period is an area of in history that I'm very interested in and had the good fortune to have involvement in various connected events over the years. And I was very interested looking at that splendid documentary on RTE1 last night, where it was mentioned that the famine didn't just kill a million people and lose, you know, the must have been damn nearly a million as well, to emigration, but that it did, it robbed us for a time of language. It robbed us of English, it robbed us of Irish. To me, that poem, I would have great difficulty reading that poem. It would choke me. I think it not just caught a period, but it caught the greatest love, a love without sentiment.
Sure.
Great. And we're going on now to our fifth nomination. We're searching for Ireland's best loved poem in the company of Damien Dempsey, Anne Doyle and John Fitzgerald, UCC's librarian. But the fifth choice is Paul Durkin, and it's called Making Love Outside Áras an Uachtaráin. Here's an extract now.
When I was a boy, myself and my girl used bicycle up to the Phoenix Park. Outside the gates, we used to lie in the grass making love outside Aras an Uachtaráin. Often I wondered what De Valera would have thought inside his ivory tower if he knew that we were in his green, green grass making love outside Aras an Uachtaráin. Because the odd thing was, oh, how odd it was, we both revered Irish patriots and we dreamed our dreams of a green, green flag making love outside Aras an Uachtaráin.
And laughter at the end of that. It's a line repeated throughout the poem, Anne, making love outside Aras an Uachtaráin. What do you reckon?
There was a bit of a conversion process for me here, John.
Oh, that's okay.
It wouldn't have been my choice as a Durkin poem, but I'd have to say that it grew on me, and Niall was very instrumental in this. Probably most of us have heard Paul Durkin read, and he is just a superlative performer. I suppose maybe I didn't quite accept that Dev was in an ivory tower, and I think it was a perfect example actually of approaching something and realizing along the way that you were taking yourself far too seriously. So that was, you know, as I say, the whole thing was it was for me, it was very mind opening, and I really hope and trust that will be the most important. The most important thing will not be that next March there will be a poem for Ireland, though that will be wonderful. Mm. The most important thing will be what it will stimulate along the way and hopefully afterwards.
Absolutely.
Sure. John Fitzgerald?
Paul Durkin for me is the kind of WikiLeaks of the Irish psyche. You know, he's constantly telling us things about ourselves that we hadn't realised we knew until we were told in the way that he tells us. He's an extraordinary original poet, and what this poem does is it's a 1978 poem, incidentally, you know, so it's not kind of ultra-modern, but it signifies the new Ireland beyond the kind of conservatism, the established conservatism that was properly kind of fractured really by the election of Mary Robinson in 2001, who incidentally used a Paul Durkin poem at the time during her inaugural address. And, you know, the reference to Diarmuid Agus Gráinne kind of invoking a new mythology, a new kind of revisioning away from the kind of conventional established heritage. So, you know, a groundbreaking poem.
And just to recap now on the five poems that we're choosing, the work set on tonight at 8:30. We'll choose the other five. It's W.B. Yeats, Easter 1916, Patrick Kavanagh, A Christmas Childhood, Sean O'Riordan, Phil Arish, Evan Boland and Quarantine, and Paul Durkin, Making Love Outside Aras an Uachtaráin. Now, poems that we haven't heard about their inclusion so far, there's no mention of Bobby Sands, but I understand a poem of his got a lot of nominations. Do you reckon it was a campaign, Damien?
I'm not too sure now. I actually put music to that poem many years ago, so I would have been in favour of the poem, but there was a lot more judges, so it didn't get through, you know, but...
John, what about that?
Yeah, this is The Rhythm of Time by Bobby Sands, a powerful poem. And, you know, it was really taken extremely seriously by the jury. You know, in forming that portrait that I spoke about earlier, all of the poems are representative. They're excellent in themselves and have to be technically brilliant and poetically brilliant in themselves. But each of them is also representative of a particular either era or event or a particular kind of, you know, character of Ireland. And we felt that there were one or two other poems that met that need. So that was one of the reasons that we didn't include Rhythm of Time. But there were so many other excellent and highly nominated poems that weren't included as well, John.
Sure. And we're going to take a break now from this. In fact, we've come to the end of the selection process. But Damien, I think you're going to sing for us before we let you go.
I'll sing us a little bit of a psalmody.
Yeah, do indeed. Yeah. What is it? Just give us the background to it.
Yes, on the way in today on the coast road, I saw about 200 of the Brent geese. They come over from Canada every year, you know, to winter here, you know. So I wrote a song about them a few years ago. So I'll give you a bit of that.
Great stuff. Off you go. And just a reminder, by the way, that the website is rte.ie/A Poem for Ireland. And if you want information on the poets, and if you want to upload a recording of yourself reciting the poems, we'd love to hear from you. And a reminder that the other five poems of the works tonight at 8:30 p.m. The other five poems will be revealed, and then voting opens on that website, A Poem for Ireland, and you have plenty of time to vote. Voting closes on the 8th of March. But here is Damien Dempsey now.